Owning pets. This is an extract from a planned book on the ownership of pets. This book will be a new memoir about a lifetime of pet ownership. As a child, the keeping of pets can be an early introduction to responsibility for others, and as with many of life's lessons, it's best to start out modestly. This can be keeping tadpoles in a jam jar, to a funfair goldfish before the greater responsibility of higher mammals, perhaps even graduating to cats and dogs via rodents and rabbits. My recollection is that tadpoles were caught in a net in the local park before being conveyed home in a jam jar and later decanted into a washing up bowl. If they survived this, I believe I would convince my mother to collect a large empty glass sweet jar from one of the local sweet shops. In those days of post-1950s sugar rationing, sweet shops seemed to be some kind of growth industry, with at least five in our suburb alone, three exclusive sweet shops and the newsagents and the sub-post office. I guess dentistry was likely to be the next growth industry. In those pre-Google days, information was not so readily to hand, so I believe we fed them with whatever we thought. I remember pieces of lettuce leaves, Google recommends this, bread and pieces of meat, possibly bacon rind, Google does not recommend this, so it's possibly miraculous that over the next few weeks at least some of them survived. Any uneaten food was to be scooped out as well as any dead ones, as tadpoles can eat one another if undernourished. Any survivors, having acquired legs, were removed to a bowl in the garden, which had a rock in the centre for the juvenile froglets to acclimatise to land, and where in all likelihood they became prey to garden birds or the family cat. At some point in my childhood, my dad constructed a small concrete pond, and I remember more successful rearing of herds, wrong collective noun, swarms, I don't know, of tiny froglets hopping about in the adjacent rockery amongst a small bed of orange nasturtiums. One drawback of the frog-raising experience was that later visits to the sweet shop would be forever marred by seeing sweet jars of dark licorice sweets that resembled the dead tadpoles and acted as a temporary appetite suppressant, at least for licorice. One thing I remember about the park pond was that several years later, when in our early teens we'd taken up fishing as a serious hobby, another boy darkly hinted that the small pond was the home to a voraciously hungry and huge monster fish by the name of Nicodemus, and had been known to bite off the fingers of children that were foolish enough to put them in the water. I doubt that we took this seriously, but may have thought our tadpoling efforts to have been lucky escapes. Recently I took a photo of the pond, and some half a century or more later, I must admit the dark waters have a sinister air that I hadn't recalled. The second episode of my pet custody was the acquisition of a fairground goldfish, and I think there must have been a series of these as we went so far as acquiring a goldfish home, complete with gravel, weed and a small stone house. Unfortunately, despite these aquatic home comforts, their lifespans always seem brutally short, so much that I don't ever remember naming them and refer to them as the fish. A more cynical school friend offered the explanation that the devious stall owners at the fun fair always bought up stocks of cheap, sickly fish so that they could get repeat business. But I now believe that hanging up the stall in plastic bags before being taken home can't have helped the fish very much. Some school friends were happy to take on lizards and slowworms, but I don't believe either of them made sensible pets, and no doubt they escaped or passed away in fright. I was briefly able to trump these exotic creatures, but not through my own efforts, but those of my mother. My mum had always been an animal lover, and old family photos often show her in childhood with a dog in tow. She must have also been used to more exotic creatures, as part of her early childhood was spent in Jamaica, where her father served with the Royal Marines as a Sergeant Major. The same photo albums show her and her brother's horse riding, and with the family parrot. This must have helped with her rescue effort back in Wales. I arrived home from school one day to see a goldfish bowl on the dining table with the top covered by a sheet of muslin cloth secured by a rubber band. I knew that the bowl had recently become vacant after the last short-lived funfair goldfish had moved on. Mum rushed in and said, "Don't touch it, it's asleep." Then, quietly crouching down with me, pointed out a mouse-like creature hanging upside down from the cloth. It was a small bat. It had been found by Mum crawling about on the pavement in bright sunshine outside the local shop, so she'd scooped it up into a shopping bag and brought it home. The request to keep it was swiftly denied, as was the idea of taking it to school. That night at dusk, it was released and flew off, much to my father's relief, who had denied any knowledge of bat food and was probably fearing bat-related vet bills. Apart from the family cat, a rather aloof ginger tom named Sandy, you'll find a naming theme developing in my family, clear, relevant and simple, rather than imaginative. The next pet to arrive came by a strange route. It appeared he was delivering himself to us down the A48 road by way of the gutter. A cousin of my mother was coming to visit us from London and was travelling down in an open MG sports car. At some point in the journey, they were held up at roadworks and spotted next to them a moving stone in the gutter. My aunt leant out of the car and picked up the stone, having realised it was a tortoise, being a relatively popular pet in the 1950s. I was thrilled when they offered it to us and made a home for it in an adapted toy wooden garage in our walled garden. It was quite tame, who had come over to you at a leisurely pace if you were in the garden, and was always pleased when offered food, or appeared so. Their facial expression range is rather limited. He was christened Torty, I did warn you. I was pleased to have extended our menagerie and happier with him. We assume he was a male, though Torty sounds non-gender specific as well as unimaginative. The main ownership advantage was that we now had owned a reptile, and it was slow-moving, benign vegetarian one. Some boyhood friends delighted in collecting slowworms and lizards, and one had produced this small snake-like creature from his pocket in class at Sunday school, much to the distress of the teacher. Another friend had a small but sinister and untouchable alligator in a heated glass tank, but I was much happier with the tortoise quietly roaming the garden.